All right, we'll say good morning. Let's begin. We are picking up with the Mishnah on Kuf Amud Beis. Kuf Amud Beis. Let's begin. Hamocher Zeisav Le'itzav. So it's an interesting case. Le'itzav, excuse me. I go ahead and I sell my olive trees for firewood. So we're talking over here about a situation where my olive trees obviously are not producing anything significant. And therefore what? And therefore I have to go ahead and I decide to sell the trees for firewood. Rashi points out over here, Mocher Zeisav La'itzim, Sheyakutz Oso L'Sreifa, V'sha Oso M'Karkus. So the case over here is, I sell Reuven my olive trees for him to cut down and to use as firewood. What happens? He delays and he leaves them in the ground. So what happens? Va'asu pachos mi'revias, they end up producing oil, but a very minimal amount of oil, less than a revias of oil for every sa'a. Hari elu shabal hazesin. So the Mishnah paskins that because it is such an insignificant amount of oil, it belongs to Reuven, the owners of the olive trees. Now we're going to discuss, remember, on a technical level, the production of that olive oil really is attributed to two sources. There's, of course, the tree, but of course the tree can't produce anything without what? Without the nutrients of the soil. So the Gemara is saying over here, when the production is of such a minimal amount, so then halacha lemaisa, again, that amount of oil will ultimately, again, belong to the owner of the trees. Also revius l'sa'ah, but if let's say again the trees produced a revius of oil, then ze omer ze si gadlo ve ze omer artsi gadlo. So we'll say, so what happens over here? We'll say kuf amud beis, the Mishnah about six lines up from the bottom. So remember again, so what happens in this case where it produces more than a revius? So what happens? The owner of the tree says it's my trees that produce the oil. The owner of the land says it's my land that produced the oil. So what's the halacha? Yachloku. The halacha Rabbi will say is that they split the value. Shatav nar zeis. So Rabbi will say this is a very interesting case. Let's say again, the river overflows my land, uproots my olive trees, and deposits them, the nastam l'soch sadeh chavero, and deposits the trees in the field of my friend. Ze omer zeisi gadlo, ve omer artsi gadlo. So Rabbi will say, so what happens? Now the olive trees produce olives. So what happens? The owner of the tree says, it's my trees that produce the olives. And the owner of the land says, it's my land that produced the olives. What's the halacha? Yachloku. The halacha ultimately is that they split the yield of the tree. Fine. Says the Gemara, Hechi Dami. So let's analyze the first case. So in case number one, I sell my olive trees to Reuven for firewood. So that, remember again, it produced less than a quarter lug of oil. So the Gemara said in that case over there, so Reuven, the new owner of the trees, gets to keep the oil. So the Gemara says, Hechi Dami, what's the case? If I said to Reuven, listen, I'm selling you the trees, I need you to cut them down now. I want them out of my field now. Then, and Reuven doesn't do so, and the trees end up producing oil, if I order Reuven to cut down the trees now, and he doesn't do so, and the trees produce olives, so ultimately, and the olives produce oil, that oil should be mine, because I, meaning mine, being the owner of the land, I ordered him to go ahead and cut down the trees now. If he doesn't do so, then he is taking from my land, and I have every entitlement to the olives. Call Amos the boy's coats. If I said to him, Reuven, listen, I'm selling you the wood to be cut down, but no rush, whenever you get around to it, then I feel a revius, nami la balzesim. Then it will say, even if it produces more than a revius of oil, it should belong to the owner of the trees. To which the Gemara says, lo tzricha da amrle stoma. So we'll say, so what's the case over here? The case over here is I sold the trees to Reuven, but I did not articulate if I want the trees cut down now or if I want the trees cut down at a later time. So pachos mi revius lo kapti inshi. So we'll say, so we assume that less than a revius of oil is so insignificant that I, the owner of the land, am not going to lodge any formal request of the oil, a mochel on it. Therefore, again, the owner of the trees gets to keep it. However, a revius kapti inshi, we'll say, once you're talking about a revius or more of oil, that's when, again, a person is makbe, that's already significant, and that's when the Mishnah rules, yachloku, the Mishnah rules that they have to split, they being the owner of the trees and the owner of the land, have to split the amount of the oil. Amar Shimon Pazi or Revius Shamru. And Rabbi say, when we say that if it's a Revius or more, they have to split it, that's a Revius, Rabbi say, after Chutz Min Ha'otzah. Meaning, that's if there's a Revius of oil left, or the value of a Revius, after all expenses have been taken. So Rashi says over here, Chutz Min Ha'otzah, Shemotzi B'Misikas, and that's, remember, there are expenses in processing olives to make it oil. So when the Mishnah says that there's a Revius of oil, that means that there's the value of a Revius of oil after you take out expenses. Okay, next case. Shut up Narzeis. So remember, what was case number two? So case number two was, I have olive trees. I have olive trees. The river came, overran, flooded my field, uprooted my olive trees, and deposited them, we'll call it, in Reuven's field. Then what happens? The trees produce olives, which then produce oil. I claim it's my trees that produced the oil. Reuven claims it's his soil that produced the oil. So what happens? What happens? The halacha again is, the halacha is yachloku. They once again, they split the value of the olives, or the value of the oil. Says the Gemara, Amar Ula, Amar Eish Lakish, Lo Shanu Ela Shenekra Begushehem. We'll say, when do we say yachloku? When do we say yachloku? That's only if the olive trees were uprooted with gushen. I don't know what the technical term is, but gushen means like they were uprooted with the clod of earth. You know, again, so that it's not the pshat, the roots aren't exposed. So when it was uprooted with the clod of earth in which the roots are in, which means that some significant, I'm sorry?
The root ball.
The root ball. Why should you just make that up? No, okay, good, alright. Sounded good, either way. Good, the root ball. So the idea over here is that, I remember, I'm the owner of the trees, my soil is going with the tree. So it's the tree with the root ball. Fine. Furthermore, again, this is happening after 3 years. Of course, remember again, after 3 years means this tree is no longer Arla. Now look at Rashi for just a moment. That the tree was uprooted with the root ball, with the clod of earth surrounding the roots. Sheyecholin lachios al yado. Sibo said, because the chap over here is what? That tree, because it has the root ball, that tree technically could still live, I'm sure not forever, but could still live for a while, even without being replanted. So in that case over there, we'll say also, Ptur mina arla, kidis nan ilan shenekar vasela imo liyachol lachios patar ve'im lav chai. This is actually an interesting discussion in the Mishnayos and Arla. Discussion in the Mishnayos and Arla is, if you uproot a tree and replant it in another field, does the arla clock restart or not? So without getting into the technicalities, everyone will agree that if the root ball was taken with it, then lemaisa, again, the arla clock does not restart. So in this case over here, number one is that the tree was uprooted, the clod of earth with the roots is with it. So therefore, this is important because the arla clock does not start over when it gets to Reuven's field. Furthermore, look at the next Rashi. Ula achar shalosh kilomar afilu nekra begushen lo shanu diachloku el la achar shalosh shanim sheshat fananar shilu nitan metchila balakarka belo gushen kvar yotzu achshem mechlala arla dahashalo mahani le gushen debalzesim midi, I'm sorry, debalzesim achar midi shalosh. So we'll say, furthermore, again, we'll see this in just a little bit. It also must be after 3 years. So Rish Lakish is coming along and saying, when do we say yachloku? In this case of the replanted olive tree, two criteria have to be in place. Number one, the root ball is intact. Number two, it's after 3 years. So the period of arla ultimately, again, is gossip. Meaning, let's go on the Gemara. Aval besoch shalosh. But if the tree were to be uprooted within 3 years, then hakol shel bal hazesim. Everyone agrees that the entire olive crop belongs to the owner of the trees. Look at Rashi. Aval besoch shalosh, gushin debal hazesim hu dekashari lehu, v'hakol shalo. See, Rabbi say, at the end of the day, if it was within 3 years and the root ball was there, so remember again, that at that point in time, the entire tree is really only permitted for consumption because the original root ball is intact. And therefore, in that case, again, the owner of the trees gets to consume all of the olives. Why? Da'amar le, because he could say to him, i'at natas besoch shalos. mihavachalt, because remember, the owner of the trees could say to the owner of the field, if you were to replant it now, would you have any rights to anything? And the answer, of course, would be no, because the maaser would be arla to you. So why can't the owner of the field say back to the owner of the tree, if I were to plant it, after 3 years, I would be entitled to the entire crop. However, hashta ka'achlas palga badai, at least now I should be able to get part of the crop. So this leads Reish Lakish to reformulate his argument. Reish Lakish says, Lo shanu ela shene'ekru b'gushehen u'besoch shalosh. Comes on Reish Lakish and says the following. When do we say achloku? That's only if the tree was uprooted, A, with its root ball, and it's within the first 3 years of arla. Avala achar shalosh, but if it was uprooted after 3 years, then hakol lebal hakarka. Then I will say, in fact, all of the olives will go to the owner of the field. Why? Da amarle, because the owner of the field could say to the owner of the tree, i'ana nati laachar shalosh. If I would have planted this tree after 3 years, milo hava achil mele kule, would I not be entitled to go ahead and eat the entire crop? Vele ma'le, and let the owner of the tree say back to the owner of the field, i'at natas besok shalosh. Had you planted it within 3 years, lahava achalt, you would not have been entitled to consume anything. Hashta ka'achalt palga bahadoi. Ultimately, again, you should only be entitled to eat half of it with me. Mishum do amalei, because he could claim back to him, meaning the owner of the field could claim back to the owner of the trees. I'anon natoi, if I would have planted these olive trees, hava katini, I would have planted more slender trees. Vizarano tehusaihu silka viyarka. So we'll say apparently there are different types of olive trees. There are wider trees and slimmer trees. What's the chapa? What's the afkamina between them? The afkamina is the following. You can't really plant anything in the area underneath the shade of the tree because the plants don't get sufficient sunlight. So if you plant wider olive trees, you can't use the area underneath the tree. If you plant slimmer trees, then Lamaisa, again, the owner of the field, could have said, I could have planted under there silk of yarka. I could have planted under there different kinds of beets and different kinds of vegetables. Fine. So bottom line for our purposes is that halacha Lamaisa, again, in this particular situation, the way we're interpreting, the way Reish Lakish is interpreting the Mishnah, is that if in the event that the river overran my field, washed away my trees, replanted them in Reuven's field, and then the trees produced olives, so who gets the olives? So the Mishnah paskins yachloku. I, the owner of the tree, have to split it with the owner of the field. Just the underlying logic behind that is because both of those contribute to the growth of the olives. You can't have the olives without the tree. You can't have the olives without the soil. Therefore, we're shutzfim. We're essentially partners. We're essentially partners in the production of the oil. All Reish Lakish comes along and teaches us is just further refines the case and says that the situation has to be where the original bulb, right, the root ball, is still intact when the trees are uprooted, and it's besoch shalosh, and ultimately it's still within the first 3 years of Arla. That will be the achloku situation. Fine. Tana, suppose that we learned. Amar halo, zesai ani notel, ain shomelom. Supposed to listen to this. Let's say, so remember again, my trees got washed away, are now replanted in Reuven's field. So remember, we're talking about how to go ahead and split the crop. But let's say, you know, there seems to be a much more intuitive original case, which is, I come to Reuven's field and I say what? I'm taking my trees back. Right, meaning I'm taking my trees back. I mean, it's interesting, if you notice, again, the Mishnah doesn't even talk about that case. The Mishnah just discusses how you split up the produce. So it says the Gemara, there's a very good reason for that, because if I show up in Reuven's field and I say, Zesani notel, I'm taking my trees, in shomen lo. They both say, we do not listen. In other words, the owner of the trees has no right to uproot his trees and take them back. My time, I will say, get ready to how beautiful this is. What's the reason for that? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So Rabbi Yochanan says, why? Because we do not go ahead, and because we are committed to creating habitation in Eretz Yisrael, creating life in Eretz Yisrael. The act of uprooting trees in Eretz Yisrael is not something we do. Therefore, again, unfortunately, it's my tree. And again, unfortunately, I'm going to suffer a little bit of a loss over here, because remember, we just saw the Pesach in the Mishnah is Yachloku, but Lamais, again, you can't uproot trees in Eretz Yisrael. Alt Yishev Eretz Yisrael, making Eretz Yisrael habitable and beautiful. I'm Rabbi Yirmiyah. So Rabbi Yirmiyah has an interesting postscript on this. He says, "Kigon da Tzricha Rabba. This type of ruling requires a lot of explanation. Rabba said, now look at Rashi, Tzricha Rabba, Shim lo pirsh Rabbi Yochanan, lo hainu omrim osa misvara. Had Rabbi Yochanan not explained this, says Rabbi Yirmiyah, we would not have thought this to be the case intuitively. In other words, intuitively, I would have assumed that when I show up at Reuven Sealed and say, I'm taking my trees back, what's the halacha? What's the halacha? I could take my trees back. So all Rabbi Yirmiyah is just saying over here, we'll say, what Rabbi Yirmiyah is driving at is the following. We've seen this before. We'll say, there are many times that Chazal make halachas that they do not explain the reason for it. Right? And there's a very good reason why often Chazal don't explain the reason for it. Because what happens, it's almost like with your kids. Right? So what happens sometimes if you tell your kids they have to do something and they ask why? They want like a whole Torah on it. Like, give me the Rashi, give me the Tosa. I want to understand your thought process. So as a parent, what do you sometimes say? Right? Do it. Why? Because you understand that if you start getting into the thought process with your kids, so again, we're going to say, well, what about this, what about that? And sometimes I'm the parent, you have to do what I say, and it's not a conversation. So Chazal sometimes adopt this type of paternalistic approach to us as well. Chazal institute halachas, Chazal or Chazal, they legislate laws, and the truth is they don't need every single shmo who thinks that he's a Tan or an Amora to start arguing with them about, I think this, and I think that, and it's this sheet, and you don't understand this. Chazal said, this is what you do. This is what you do. A lot of Judaism is about being a good soldier and just knowing how to listen to Chazal, knowing how to listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what Rabbi Yirmiyah is saying over here is, however, there are some halachos that Chazal make that just seem to be so out of the ballpark that Chazal have to explain it in order that we understand at least some frame of reference where they're coming from. So Rabbi Yirmiyah is just saying over here, you know, I would have thought that absolutely the owner of the trees has every single right to go ahead and reclaim his trees. Interestingly enough, however, comes along Rabbi Yochanan and says, no, it's not the case. You have to leave your Yerushim from Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yochanan says, oh, you know what? It's good that Rabbi Yochanan explained this, because had he not explained this, I would have had absolutely no clue as to where this is coming from. Next.
Is that the fruit trees only?
Well, it really only has a ramification. I mean, it only has a real nafgamina for fruit trees, because there's produce.
But if the guy wants to come back and take his maple tree.
So the Pashas, Rabbi Yochanan's logic would apply to any tree. You cannot uproot vegetation in Eretz Yisrael, transplant it somewhere else. Unless, again, obviously, we'll say there are exceptions to this rule. But the Pashas, this is an acute situation, because remember, olives are my parnosa. This is my livelihood. I'm an olive farmer, if that's the right term. So the mice over here, again, it's not just about the fact that I had a nice tree in my yard, I want it back. This is my parnosa, yet again, we're still passing, you can't uproot it.
Does it get compensation?
Yeah, yachloku, that's the Mishnah. Yachloku, they split
this. Well,
the value of the tree is the olives. Tanai Hassam. Tanai Hassam. All right, I'm closing down. It's no longer, no dafyomi karaoke over here. All right, we're cutting this down. So Tanai Hassam. Rabbi Yehuda says the following. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mekabel, thank Schoenfeld. Hamekabel sada avosa min anochri. So what happens? So again, so we'll say, so another interesting case. Hamekabel sada avosa min anochri means, we're gonna define the scope of this case in just a little bit. I receive, literally the way this translates is, sada avosa is an ancestral field. I receive an ancestral field from a nochri. Again, we'll discuss what this means. Ma'aser v'nosin. So we'll say, so the case over here, look at Rashi. Hamekabel lemechza. So as I said, the way we're working over here is I'm like a sharecropper. I'm a sharecropper. So I am farming the field, and I give the nachri, I give a Gentile a certain percentage of the crop. So the crop is mine, but I pay him a certain percentage of the crop. So this is an interesting halacha. Ma'aser, the halacha is, before I give the nachri his portion, I have to take ma'aser from the total yield of the field. So meaning, the havamina is, what should I take ma'aser from? I should take ma'aser from my share of the crop. So let's say again, I have an 80-20 split with the nachri. So I give him his 20%, and then I should take trumas and ma'asos from the remaining 80%, which now becomes my 100%. To which the Gemara says, no, the way it works is, you take trumas and ma'asos from the entire crop, right? And then you give the nachri his portion. In other words, the nachri is going to get his 20% of the yield, but I have to take trumas and ma'asos from 100% of the total crop, including the nachri's portion. Menoseimo savruah. So the Gemara says, what's the logic behind that? My sadabos of Eretz Yisrael. So I'll say, so I'm assuming, we assume that, what does it mean, an ancestral field? It means that we're referring over here to Eretz Yisrael. So why does it call an ancestral field? My karoli sadabos of Sade Avram Yitzchak V'Yakov. I'll say, so beautiful. So we're talking about over here where someone is farming. This is Eretz Yisrael day. Someone is farming Someone is farming in Eretz Yisrael, a piece of Eretz Yisrael. Now the Nachri happens to own the land, and so again, I have a sharecropping arrangement with him. So the halacha is I must tithe based on the entire crop output, and not just on my portion. The Kasabra, what's the logic behind that? Both said this is a hotly contested discussion. Ein kinyan lenachri b'Eretz Yisrael lafkia miyad meiser. So we'll say, because what the Gemara is teaching me over here is that Gentile ownership of the land does not go ahead and remove the sanctity of the land. I will say, this is one of the most important machloksim, not just in historical Eretz Yisrael, but in contemporary Eretz Yisrael, because you understand this has made ramifications every 7 years, because the whole concept of heter mechira, the concept of the ability to sell land to a non-Jew, and thereby circumvent the laws of Shemitah, is predicated on the idea that Gentile ownership of Eretz Yisrael removes certain kedusha from the land. It's just important to understand that there are also those who are vehemently against heter mechira. This is not like a Zionism argument. So whether or not you're pro or against heter mechira is a halachic argument. It's absolutely a halachic argument, because they both say it's a fundamental machlokes. Right? We're seeing it. Does a Nachri, does a non-Jew have a kinyan in Eretz Yisrael or not? The nafkamina being if a Gentile owns Jewish land, because it's all Jewish land, even if a Gentile owns it, but lamais again, does it remove the kedusha of the land or not? So it must be over here. What we're saying over here is the fact that I have to tithe the entire crop. What does that tell me? The Gentile ownership of the land does not remove the sanctity of the land. And furthermore, umikabel, and I will say, without getting into all technicalities over here, there are different types of like leasing agreements of land. So what he calls a makabel, which I guess we would translate as a sharecropper, is like a chocher. So chocher is literally translated often like a tenant farmer. So these are just different types of farming arrangements. But what we're seeing over here is that in both of these situations, both the tenant farmers as well as the sharecroppers are usually considered to be full owners of the produce. The produce belongs to them, and then they subsequently have to pay a fee, a leasing fee, a rental fee, to the Gentile owners. To which the Gemara says, Ma chocher bein avad bein lo avad boi yisuri umeitonle. So we'll say, ultimately, just like the tenant farmer, whether the field produces or the field doesn't produce, he's got to pay the Gentile owner. So the Gemara says, umeitonle dechi poreach ovasodami. He's like someone paying a bill, paying a debt. Af mekabel, so to a sharecropper, nami ki poreach ovasodami, ma'aser v'nosinlo. Therefore, I will say, essentially, because both of these individuals are considered to be the owner of the produce, therefore they must tithe the entire produce and then only afterwards give the Gentile his portion. But that which we learned, Rabbi Hudomer, Hamekabel Sada Avosav Mimatzik Nochri. We'll say if somebody goes ahead and receives an ancestral field from a Matzik Nochri, what's a Matzik? If you look at Rashi, Matzik is an anas. So literally, again, a criminal, right? So an anas is someone who extorts land. So what happens? There is a non-Jew who extorted land from a Jew, and now I am working that land. I'm a sharecropper on that land. So what's the halacha? Ma'aser v'nosein lo. So I say, so the halacha is ultimately, again, I have to take ma'aser from the entire crop, and then only afterwards do I separate out the Gentile's portion. So my area, so in other words, I will say, so remember, I get kind of hit doubly in this, because remember again, the Gentile's portion is going to come from 100% of the crop. The Trumas and Maestros also come from 100% of the crop. So the idea is I figure out my Trumas and Maestros, right, and then I figure out ultimately again how much I owe the Gentile. So the Gemara says, well, if that's the case, my area, Matzik, Afilo in Matzik Dami. Why do you have to set this up as a case of a Gentile criminal? What does it matter if the Gentile owner is a criminal or not a criminal? Bottom line, at the end of the day, the halacha is I have to go ahead and give the Gentile, I have to tithe from 100% of the crop. To which the Gemara says, El li olam, yesh kinyan l'nachri b'eretz Yisrael afkia miyad ma'aser. So we'll say, rather, in reality, we're saying that there is, a non-Jew does have the ability to own a land in Eretz Yisrael, and thereby, remove the sanctity of the land for Trumas and Maestros. And it may be that a sharecropper is not like a tenant farmer. In other words, that perhaps a sharecropper does not own the crop in its entirety. Umas sade avosav. So we'll say, so what are we talking about when we say an ancestral field? Sade avosav mamish. Oh, well, so this is very interesting. What's the case over here? The case over here is the non-Jew seized my ancestral land in Eretz Yisrael. And what happens now? After he seized it from me, he hired me to be the sharecropper. So what happens? So the Gemara says, "Uladidehu de kansu rabbanon." So we'll say, so what happened? So the rabbis penalized me. Now we're going to discuss why this is. The rabbis penalized me, and they told me that when I take chumas and maestras from this land, what do I have to do? I have to take chumas and maestras from 100% of the crop. Da'ayli de chaviva alei tvei va'azil makabela. Since this field is precious to me, I will pay the penalty. In other words, we'll say the penalty is that I have to go ahead and take chumas and maestras, not just on my portion, but on 100% of the field. About inish da'alma lo. But we'll say regular people who do not have a familial connection to this field, they're going to realize this is a bad deal, and they're not going to farm this field. I will the day my time a kansura. So what is this? This doesn't make sense. Why would the rabbis penalize me? Meaning I'm the former owner of this field. The Gentiles stole my field. And now he hired me as a sharecropper. So you're telling me under the strict letter of the law, I only have to tithe what? Only have to tithe what? My portion of the crop, not 100%, not the Gentiles' portion as well. This is a rabbinic penalty. And the rabbis are only penalizing me, the former owner of the field, who's now the sharecropper, but not penalizing someone else. What's the pshat, says the Gemara? Listen to this. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kadesha Tehei Barab Yadar. We'll say why. The penalty is not really there to penalize me. The penalty is there to incentivize me to do what? To do whatever I can to buy back my land. Since this is such a bad financial setup, because I have to tithe based on 100% of the yield of the field, not just my portion, it incentivizes me to go ahead and buy back my field from the Gentile. And I will say again, Chazal are essentially incentivizing the Jewish sharecropper to do whatever he can to buy back his land in Eretz Yisrael. Amr Rabbi Yirmiyah Kigom Da, Tzricha Rabba. So we'll say again, Rabbi Yirmiyah comes and says, oh, by the way, this is another one that I'm really happy, Rabbi Yochanan, you explained this. Because without your explanation, I would not, certainly not intuitively assumed this, and would not have understood this. Gemara goes weiter. Itmar, Hayori Lisok Sadech Haveira V'Nata Shlo Bershos. Oh, so it's an interesting halacha. I go into my friend's field, and I plant in his field without his permission. So I plant some trees in his field without his permission. So Amarav, so we'll say, remember, we've already discussed the idea that halacha l'maisa, again, when you do something of objective value for someone, so the halacha is that they have to pay you. They have to pay you for your services, even though they did not request it. This is assuming it's of objective value. But how do we evaluate those services? Amarav, shamin lo, v'yada ala tachtona. So Rav says, look, what we do is we evaluate the services. Shamin lo literally means, Rashi says over here, yada ala tachtona, ema shevach yes ala hatzar. So there are two potential values over here. There is the shevach, the appreciation of the field, and there is expenses, hotzos. So Rav essentially says, we take the lower of those two amounts, the appreciation of the field now that it's planted, or the expenses, and that's the amount that the owner of the field has to pay the planter. Ushmuel, Amr Shmuel says, Omdim, kama adam rotza litim besada zulinota. And Shmuel says, no, we evaluate the amount that someone would go ahead and want to pay in order to have trees planted in his field. They're not really arguing. There are two different kinds of fields. If it's a field that people normally plant trees in, so then we would use Shmuel's metric. If it's a field that people wouldn't normally plant in, we use Rav's metric. Okay? Rav's statement was not said explicitly, rather it was inferred. What did Rav say? Both say, Kuf Aleph Amud Aleph, first white line on the bottom. There was a man who came before Rav. So what happens? We'll say, so this kind of case came before Rav, where someone went ahead and planted in his friend's field without the friend's permission. So Amarlei Zil Shum Le. So ultimately, again, so Rav said to the Baal HaSadeh, to the owner of the field, no, go ahead and evaluate how much appreciation versus how much expense, and pay the planter the lower of the two. Amar le lo ba'ina. Listen to this. So the Baal HaSadeh said to Rav, you don't understand. I didn't ask for this. Meaning, why should I pay him anything? I didn't ask him for anything. In other words, he showed up at my field and he just started planting saplings. Is there some type of objective benefit? There might be, but I didn't ask for this. Amarle, zil, shumle. So Rav said again to the owner of the field, no, you have to pay him viyado ala tachtona. And ultimately again, but he's at a disadvantage. In other words, his disadvantage is that you only have to pay him the lower of either the appreciation or the expenses. Amarle lo ba'ina. To which the Baal HaSadeh keeps retorting and he keeps saying, you don't understand, Rav, I don't want this. I didn't ask for this. I didn't ask for the guy to show up at my house and start planting trees. I understand that there may be an objective value. But again, just to be clear, I didn't ask for this. So what happens was, listen to this. After a while, Rav saw that the guy put up a fence around his yard in order to go ahead and protect the trees. So I said, oh, you've now shown that it is a benefit for you that the trees are there. Zil shumle viyado al ha'olyono. Ot nevos, and I hear it changed gears. See, Rav Paskin the entire time that when someone does work, it is of objective benefit to your bosai. You have to pay for it. Yeah, objective benefit. That's the key over here. You have to pay for it. But you only have to pay the lower of the two amounts, either of his expenses or of appreciation. So in other words, if somebody comes and plants trees in my yard, and let's say again, had I hired someone to do it, the job would have been $5,000. I don't have to pay him $5,000. I have to pay him the lower of either the appreciation or his expenses. In this case over here, Rav saw that the guy clearly wanted it. The fact that he put up a fence and the fact that he was guarding the trees, Rav said, oh, you want it. Now, not only do you have to pay him, b'yada al ha'alyona. You have to pay him ultimately again the higher of the two amounts, ultimately again either expenses or appreciation. Next, so the Gemara says, itmar hayori l'sochur v'asol shalchavir. That was another interesting case. I go into the ruin of my friend. So right, Reuven has a broken down house, a ruin. And what happens? Ubinah shalo b'shuso. I rebuild the ruin without his rishus. V'amarlo. So what's I say? After I rebuild it without his rishus, what do I do? V'amarlo etzay va'avana in the hotel. Then I said, Reuven, you know what, Reuven? I know I rebuilt this without your rishus. Listen, I need back my stones and my wood. Right? In other words, which is another way of saying, I need to deconstruct that which I built for you without your permission. So what's the halacha? Rav Nachman amar shomen lo. Rav Nachman says, listen, he has the right to do that. Rav Sheshes amar in shomen lo. Rav Sheshes says, no, we don't listen to him. So may say, so what's this? Yomar na raise the kasha. Rav Shimon Gamliel omer, beshame omrim shomen lo. Ubeisilo omrim in shomen lo. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, the Rav said, this in fact is a machlokis beshamai and beisilo. Beshamai says, we listen to him, we allow him to deconstruct the chorva. Beisilo says, we do not allow him to deconstruct the chorva. Leimur Rav Nachman damer ki beshamai. Hu damer. Leimur Rav Nachman damer ki beshamai. So we'll say that Rav Nachman aligns with beshamai, to which the Gemara says, no. Hu damer ki aitana desanyo shomen lo divrei Rav Shimon alazar. So we'll say again. It's a machlokas if it is a machlokas. That's the bottom line over here. Right? Is it machlokas b'sham b'sila? Is it not machlokas b'sham b'sila? But okay, bottom line. My habiyah. So we'll say, okay, bottom line. So what's the halacha? Right? Reuven came into my field, rebuilt my ruin of his own volition. He did not ask me. Then he comes along and says, by the way, I need my wood and my stones back. He wants to deconstruct that which he built. Does he have the right to do that? I'm Rabbi Yaakov, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, I'm a base. What's the halacha? The bay is shomen lo, the sada in shomen lo. So, listen to this. If he rebuilt a home, then yes, and again, he did this without my permission, and he did it ultimately with his own building materials, then yes, Reuven has the right later on to come along and say, I need to take my wood and my stones back and to effectively deconstruct the home. However, besada ain't shomelo. But also, when it comes to a field, we do not. In other words, if Reuven came along, I had a fallow field, and Reuven came along and planted my field, and then he says, you know what? I need my saplings back. I need my trees back. We do not allow him to dig up the trees. So we allow him to deconstruct the home. We don't allow him to dig up the trees. Why not? Besada my taima. Bosa again so beautifully mishum yishav Eretz Yisrael. Because again, in order to encourage the habitation of Eretz Yisrael, so again, to deconstruct the home, that you can do, but lamaisa to uproot a field, that you cannot do. Ika da'amri mishum kacha shad ara. We'll say, others say that you can't uproot a field, why? Because you're weakening the soil. Because we'll say, once you've planted in the field, so those plants or those saplings, which is whatever, have already begun to soak up the nutrients. If you now uproot it and plant something else there afterwards, you will weaken the field. So, what is the practical difference between these two opinions? So now everybody's agreeing that you can deconstruct the house, but you can't uproot the field. We just have a machlokas as to why you can't uproot the field. Is it mishum yishuv Eretz Yisrael, or is it because you're weakening the field? Which words is my ben? What's the nafkamina between those two reasons? What's the nafkamina will be, are you permitted to uproot a field in Chutz La'aretz? In other words, let's say Reuven came into my field in Chutz La'aretz and he planted it and now he wants to uproot the saplings. He wants to take back the saplings. Can he do it? So it depends. If you hold that it's about weakening the field, then what? Even in Chutz La'aretz, you can't do it. But if you hold that it's Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, then this is only a din in the field of Eretz Yisrael, but not a din in Chutz La'aretz. Good. Says the Mishnah. We'll say a mask, and now we're going to get into some interesting rental law. Right? Real estate rental and leasing law. So a mask here by Sachaver, we'll say Yishan. So we'll say, if I rent a home to my friend during the rainy season. So just for our contextual purposes, in Eretz Yisrael, the rainy season is considered to be from Sukkis until Pesach. So I rent my friend a home during the rainy season. So I am not permitted to go ahead and eject him from the home. I can't terminate the lease between Sukkis and Pesach. That's the rainy season. So the way ultimately we're going to understand this phrase, I'll just tell it to you now because it'll make things a little bit easier. The way we're going to learn this is, unless, of course, you give him 30 days notice during the summer season. Now, we'll discuss what that means later on. Ubikrochim, however, again, I will say, in cities, Echad Yimosachama ve'Echad Yimosachishamim, Shneima Sachodesh. This is very interesting. In cities, so whether it's the winter or whether it's the summer, a landlord cannot evict someone without giving them at least 12 months notice. You have to give 1 year notice. Look at Rashi. Ubikrochin, Ubshehin Makom Ashukim, Shakol Nimshachim Sham Lagursham, Vabatin Ein Mitsuyim Liskar. So you both say the assumption is that in cities, there's always a housing shortage. So because there's always a housing shortage, the landlord cannot eject the tenant with less than 12 months notice. Ubikhanuyos, we'll say if you are renting someone, I guess we'd call it what we call retail space, right? You're renting someone, I'm sorry, commercial space, right? So somebody's renting space for a store, right? Echad ayaros ve'echad krachim, whether ultimately, again, I'm renting it to them in the cities or in the villages. So what's the halacha? Actually, the villages and the cities. Shnei masar chodesh. We'll say you have to go ahead and give 12 months notice before you evict a tenant in commercial space. They both say, interestingly enough, we're going to see, if you look at Rashi, this is actually fascinating. What's the reason for that? It's not because commercial space is not easily found. Rashi says there's something amazing. Listen to this, just as a because of time. The assumption is shopkeepers often extend credit. So if a shopkeeper is going to be evicted from his space, he needs to have sufficient time, I will say, to what? Not only to find a new location, but what? Collect his debts. So you need to give him a year in which to be able to go ahead and collect his debts. Rishimigal says, Chalos shanachtumin bakers, v'shel tzavan dyers, shalos shanim. They need 3 years notice. Which I would say is fascinating, right? They need being able to give 3 years notice. So apparently, again, using our same logic, we will see these type of industries used to extend huge amounts of credit. So literally, again, it would take them up to 3 years to be able to make sure to settle all of their accounts receivable. So you have to give them literally 3 years notice. Quite interesting. Says the Gemara. So what's the logic over here? The Mishnah begins by saying, that if you rent someone a home during the rainy season, so the halacha is that you can't evict them during the rainy season. So what's the pshat? Tichi agar inish beisa b'mavsa gishamim, agar l'kulu yimos gishamim. So what's that? Because the logic seems to be when somebody rents a home during the rainy season, they are what? Their intention is to rent the home for that entire season. So that's the Gemara, fine. Yimosa chama nami, tichi agar inish beisa l'kulu yimosa chama agar. Why can't I say something by the summer? Right, when a person rents a home for the summer, they're also renting it for the entire summer season. Meaning, why is this unique by the rainy season? Ella, bimosa gisham haynu taimo, delo shchiach besa lemegar. Rather, Rabbo said, the reality is that during the winter time, it was just more difficult to be able to find rentals. That was just the metzias. It was just more difficult to be able to find. So therefore, if a person is evicted during the winter time, it's going to be exceptionally difficult for them to be able to find a place to live. So it says the Gemara, and that's the logic. That's why the Mishnah tells me, as a landlord, I can't evict my tenants during the rainy season, because it's going to be very difficult for them to find another place to live. We'll say, so it's just a Metzias issue. It's just not a Slora issue. It's just a Metzias issue, a reality issue. Amos Seifa, yeah, look at the end of the Mishnah. Krachim, when it comes to large cities, Echad Yimosechal, Avecha Yimosech Yisham Shneim Asachodesh. So we'll say, what's the halacha? When it comes to larger cities, you have to give your tenant 12 months notice before eviction. To which the Gemara says, interestingly enough, v'imalu le yomei schiros b'mosa yishamim mafik le. Now, I'll say, what that sounds like over here is if I give 12 months notice, and what? That 12 months notice ends when? During the rainy season. Then what's going to be the halacha? They have to leave during the rainy season. But how can you do that? Va'amai, based on what we said, it's difficult to find rentals in the rainy season. Va'amai, ha lo shiach be'salamegar. We just got finished saying what Rabbi was saying. It's difficult to find rentals during the rainy season. So now after 12 months, and why should I be able to evict them then? Rav Yehuda lo hodia katani. Actually, what we're talking about over here, Rabbi Osai, is ultimately, again, informing the tenant. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Lohdia tani. So it's talking about Harach Shloshim Yom V'Yud Beis Chodesh. Tiktani Mas Nisin Lohdia Kama. Let's actually read the Gemara. Don't come back to the Rashi. This is what it means to say. Hamaskir Bayis Lechaveiro Stam. We'll say if I rent a home to my friend Stam, just Stam, a Stam rental. Aim Yochol Lo Tzio B'Mosag Yishamim. So we'll say I'm not permitted to go ahead and remove him from the rental during the rainy season. What's the rainy season? Mechag va'ad ha-Pesach. From Sukkis until Shavuos. Ele'im kein hod... Excuse me, from Sukkis until Pesach, I'm sorry. Ele'im kein hodiyo shloshim yom me'ikara. Oh, Shavuos saying, the only way I am permitted to terminate a lease during the rainy season is how? Is if I told him at least 30 days before Sukkis. So if I informed my tenant that, look, this lease is going to come to an end sometime during the rainy season. That is permitted as long as I told him 30 days before Sukkot. So as long as I gave him at least 30 days notice before the advent of the rainy season, that should go ahead and give him enough time to be able to search out a suitable replacement for the rental when the lease ends, even though the lease is ending during the rainy season itself. Look at Rashi about it for just a moment. Rashi says, "L'hodia katani, hanach shoshen v'yod beis chodesh tektani masnis and l'hodia kamar." The 30 days are all saying the 12 months are talking about, again, informing the tenant. Look at Rashi. He says, Hamaskir bayis lechaveiro, kol yimei haschiros yimei gishamim, ein yochel lehotzia misham, lo shlichi bati. So we'll say, if the rental agreement ends during the rainy season, the lease ends during the rainy season, under normal circumstances, I, the landlord, cannot evict my tenant then, because as we said before, he's going to have difficulty finding another rental. Ele imkein, hodia b'mosachama shloshim yom, shlo yarchiv lo azman mishiyich lezmano, v'hainu mitesvav be'elul tzorach lehodia shloshim kodim achag, or melech shaminon, shimkalu yimei yischirish b'mosachama. So we'll say, fine. So now, again, we're saying something amazing. So therefore, the halacha is the following. Without any notice prior to the rainy season, I can't terminate the lease during the rainy season. However, again, if I structured the lease in such a way that I told him at least 30 days before Sukkot, the lease is going to end during the rainy season, and I am not extending the lease, just so you understand that, then I, the landlord, am covered, and I could go ahead and evict the tenant even during the rainy season. I'm using the word evict, but what I really mean is, over here, is I don't have to renew the lease until the end of the rainy season. Tanya Rabbi Yochanan, that supports this as well. Kishamru Shloshim. When we speak about 30 days, when we speak about 12 months, lo amru ela lahodio. I will say we're talking about, again, in terms of informing the tenant. Ukeshim shemaskir tzarach lahodio. And I will say, now the Gemara says, by the way, we've only been focusing on the landlord and his responsibility towards the tenant. But the same way that the landlord has a responsibility to inform the tenant at least 30 days prior to the rainy season, kach socher tzarach lahodio. So to Rabbi say, any halacha that applies to the landlord is going to apply equally to the tenant. In other words, whenever there's an obligation to inform the tenant, there would be an obligation for the tenant to inform the landlord if the tenant is going to be leaving. Do amar lei, e o da asan, havatarachna umosivna be inish ma'alya. Because let's remember again, if the tenant just leaves without giving notice, so the owner could have a claim again and say, listen, had I known that you were leaving, I would have worked hard to be able to go ahead and find a suitable replacement. So the Gemara says, Amar Avasi, im nichnas yom echad b'mosag yishamim, So listen to this. Now, what this literally sounds to say is, im nichnas, if literally, again, if he came in one day into the rainy season, so the owner does not have the right to remove the tenant until Pesach. It's during the rainy season. Aye, vaha anan tnan shloshim yom kamar. But one second, we learned that Allah says, as long as the landlord gives the tenant 30 days notice before the rainy season, that the lease is going to end during the rainy season, that is halachically appropriate. To which the Gemara says, this is what it means to say, hachi kamar, im nichnas yom echad b'imosa gishama hani shloshim yom, eino yocholo tzio min hachag va'ad ha-pesach. The Misi Rabbo says the following, if the landlord only gave notice within one day into the 30 days, he can no longer go ahead and end the lease during the rainy season. Others are both saying that this 30 days is not just a general number. This 30 days is a specific number. That should the landlord only give notice to the tenant 29 days before Sukkot, that he's going to terminate the lease during the rainy season. So ultimately, again, the tenant has every right to say, no, you're not. The tenant has every right to say, I am here until Pesach because you missed the 30-day window. Amir Rav Nachman, Hai Lankite, just listen to this, it was an interesting lashon over here. So, I'm sorry. Amar Rav Huna, so Rav Huna said, however, Ve'im ba l'rabos b'dameha marbe. So, this is actually very interesting. But Rav Huna comes along and says, but if he wants to increase the rent, he can. In other words, Rav Huna said, this is very important, you sold. So, the landlord cannot go ahead and kick out, can't evict the renter during the rainy season. Okay? But what he can do is, He can increase the rent. He can increase the rent. I must say we're going to define this in just a little bit. So listen to this. This is actually interesting. Rav Nachman said, wow, hai lankete bikufse delishavke liglime. This is like someone who takes hold of someone else. Bikufse literally means by the cluster. Rashi says, by the beitzim. Rashi says, this is literally like someone who has someone else in a compromising position, who in Kurs says he's not going to let go until he sells him his cloak. In other words, isn't that a little bit, Gemara is using a pretty colorful lotion over here, but isn't this pretty much like putting someone under duress? Meaning on one hand, you can't kick the guy out because it's the middle of the rainy season, right? And at the same time, you could raise the rent. Everyone says, what is the guy going to do? Remember, we just established before that what? That is not, there's usually, the housing market is very difficult during the rainy season. So I can't kick him out, but I can raise the rent. Tzvi Shmuel says, no, lo tzricha di yakravati. No. When could the landlord go ahead and raise the rent, Rabbi was saying, when the real estate market is going up? In other words, the landlord can't just unilaterally go ahead and choose to go ahead and raise the rent. But if the housing market is going up, Rabbi was saying, this obviously is a situation, this is a month-to-month rental, right? Because if somebody has a locked-in lease agreement, then you can't go ahead and change the terms. But assuming it's a month-to-month rental, so fine. So the landlord's hands are tied. Assuming the landlord did not give sufficient notice prior to Sukkot, right before Sukkot, he's locked into the rental till the end of the rainy season. But should real estate prices go up, so the money's taken under those circumstances, the landlord could say, listen, I can't kick you out, but I absolutely have every right to go ahead and raise the rent. So we'll have to stop over here for today. I think I'm going to try to record a little bit more Amir Tzishim, at least until the mission of this afternoon. But we'll stop over here for today.
Can the tenant then leave if he can't pay it? He's not selected.
He's like, so he can.